I'm Sandy Toksvig, and welcome to this edition of the News Quiz Extra, the deep pan, generously topped version of your usual news quiz slices. It's nothing to be afraid of. Just grab it and take a bite while nobody's looking. Oh, dear. You've gone and got some sauce on your chin. Oh, well, on with the show.
We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Hastings Advertiser, read by Zeb Sains.
Lawnmower for sale, £30. Tends to catch fire, but easy to put out with a garden hose.
And our thanks to Margaret Hickman for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Hugo Rifkin. And opposite them on my left, Shappy Korsandi and Phil Jupitus. Jeremy, who's been involved in a race to the polls?
Well, loads of people. The trouble is that the perennial problem with elections is they are always held on a Thursday. Mm. And this show, disappointingly, for people who think it's all completely live and that we live in your wirelesses, is recorded on a Thursday, therefore we don't know what's happened.
Well, I was going to just do a few variations for them to use in the edit. So, well done, Boris. Congratulations, Ken. Goodness me, Brian, that is a surprise.
Presumably, David Cameron is very, very pleased, that, assuming Boris is still Mayor of London, because an angry, unemployed Boris is not what Cameron wants around.
You've had everywhere else in the country people have been voting whether they should have mayors or not, which is this sort of great Tory idea that the government's been so keen on that they've not mentioned it at all for the last 2 years.
Doncaster are voting to whether to stop having a mayor, which we didn't even get as an option. I like that.
Is it Hartlepool where the mayor dresses as a monkey? You know about him?
No.
He stood to be elected as mayor dressed as a monkey to kind of ridicule the office of mayor.
Yeah, it was the Hartlepool mascot, Hangus.
But he got elected as mayor.
He actually got the gig.
And the next time he was campaigning again, and everyone was like, well, where's your monkey suit? And he's like, I want to put the monkey thing behind me. But they wouldn't let him, so he still has to campaign
like
as a monkey.
It's like that when you're a monkey. People never let you forget.
No. Salford and Liverpool are electing their first mayors. Does anybody know if Salford asked for a mayor? They didn't ask for the BBC, but we sent it there anyway.
David Cameron did an interview yesterday saying he wanted a Boris for every city, which would have gone down very well in Liverpool, you'd have thought.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, is he cloning Boris? Has he got a little cellar full of Borises, just full of cantankerous blonde toddlers swearing at each other?
They're like gremlins. If you get them wet, then more ones shoot out the back.
Bizarrely, I can vote in the mayoral elections, but I can't vote because I'm foreign.
Are you still foreign? It's been a while.
I know.
I'm sure there must be an operation for that kind of thing.
But I'm allowed to vote for the London mayor and in the local... I don't know why, and in the local elections I'm allowed to vote because I...
Sorry, I have absolutely no idea what you're saying. Could you speak more slowly?
I popped into a booth on my way to the recording. I don't know if my vote counted, but I got four lovely photographs of myself.
It's still brilliantly basic, though, isn't it? They give you a black crayon and you actually have to put across there. I think that's marvellous. And if you forget your glasses, you could vote for anybody, couldn't you?
But do you not think they're expecting very stupid people to vote? Because it said right across it in massive letters, do not fold. And the man said, have you read that? Don't fold. OK, all right. I know it's taking place in a primary school. It doesn't have to treat me.
I read somebody suggesting today that what you should do is go into the booth, take your trousers off, come out and hand them over and say, have you got that in a size 32?
Local and mayoral elections were held across the country this Thursday because of the large number of elections. Some UK residents had as many as three ballot papers, as well as the option to turn their chair round if they liked the sound of the candidate's voice. Parties had very different objectives for Thursday. David Cameron wanted a big win in London. Ed Miliband wanted a swing to Labour nationwide. Nick Clegg wanted a quiet night in and maybe a curry. 2 points to Jeremy. Hugo, who is either not fit and proper or has been properly fitted up?
Oh, good. Do I get this one? This is Rupert Murdoch, who has done many great things, including pay my salary. He was declared...
Oh, that's right, I'd forgotten. You wrote for the Times. Oh, I feel terrible
oh,
now.
Oh, what a chance, yes. Could have gone to anyone. The House of Commons Select Committee on Culture, Media and Sport declared this week that he wasn't a fit and proper person to own a company. Now, obviously, working for News International, writing for a paper owned by News International, I'm hopelessly biased on this, and don't pretend you don't think that, Sandy, because I heard you say it on your partner's voicemail. But... But you have to say, I mean, the idea that this committee is completely impartial, the people on this committee, Tom Watson, he wasn't complaining about News International when his mate Gordon was sucking up to the Murdochs and going to pyjama parties and getting first dibs on the horse and all that. But since then, he's suddenly got on his high horse, not even a police horse, a high horse. And if I wasn't quite so calm and rational and generally okay with this, it would make me a bit cross, frankly. Yes.
Hugo.
Mm.
Okay. we know... We're all very fond of you. You and I are both men of the world. Well, I'm not because I grew up in Surrey, but we're all very fond of you on the programme, and nobody expects you to publicly denounce Rupert Murdoch, but just nod your head if you're slightly embarrassed by your newspaper's craven approach to the monsters who own it. Don't say anything, because I think this is being recorded.
Is it not likely, Hugo, that the News Corp will now sell its British newspapers? I was just thinking, be careful the next time you see The Sun, only 20p, be careful. You might have a media empire on your hands. You have no idea. What it is you're buying?
I don't know. I mean, he's owned them for a very long time, and they're not, like, the most profitable bit of his empire.
The sooner British newspapers are out of the hands of that man and into the hands of an upstanding Russian oligarch, the better. Have you followed this, you guys? Are you interested in the whole Leveson? Has it gone on too long?
I was in Australia for a whole month, up until a week ago, and I came back and this was still in the news. I was like, oh, God, I'm going to tear my face off in boredom. Can't we just put them all in prison and stop talking about it?
Is it due to finish at any point?
No, it's not going to finish.
Is it just a rolling inquiry now?
The problem is newspapers are an industry with a lot of trouble, and basically they've now figured out something that they can put in newspapers for the rest of the time there is newspapers.
The fecundity of the press is the only thing keeping the press going now.
Absolutely, yeah. That's it, forever. Yeah.
I think that when Lord Leveson closes it every day, he's going, that closes proceedings today.
The Select Committee investigating the phone hacking scandal has concluded that Rupert Murdoch is not a fit and proper person to run a media company. The story was front page news around the world. The Guardian said the Murdochs had shown willful blindness. The Wall Street Journal accused them of misleading Parliament, while The Sun noted that New England manager Roy Hodgson has a speech impediment. 2 points to Hugo. Shappy, have a listen to this. 'Cause I'm leaving on a jet plane. Chappy, where are the lines bordering on ridiculous? Do you see what I've done there?
You've got no excuse for not knowing this, because you just said you've been away and you've just come back into the country.
Yeah.
She's been away for 6 weeks, two of which were spent at Heathrow.
Ah, right. Well, what's bordering on ridiculous is the amount of time you have to queue at immigration
right,
to
two
get
points.
In. To, thank you very much. And I found the story quite intriguing because I used to not have a British passport. I used to have an Iranian passport. And before, when you went to the non-EU queue, it's a horrible queue, that one. It's just like there's hay around and chickens and everything. And so I really appreciate the British queue. However, if you moan about the queuing, imagine what it's like trying to get into any country with place of birth, Tehran, Iran on it, right? And I'll be honest, I would take a couple of hours queuing over rubber gloves and a bottle of lube any day. And so what I do now, like when I want to get back into Heathrow, they just because of the way I was born, they treat you so suspiciously. And so what I do is I just talk and act as British as I possibly can. There's my passport, never mind where I was born. I read Enid Blyton still, and I'm on Radio 4. I'm like, let her in, she's nuts, she'll fit in.
Do you not think it could be an opportunity for the government to merge the border queues with the citizenship test? It seems to me, if you can queue in an orderly fashion and moan for half an hour, constantly...
I want to tell you a genuine question that was in the British citizenship test, because they're multiple choice. And one question is, the heir to the throne is called A, the Prince of Wales,
B, the Prince of Britain, or C, the artist formerly known as Prince?
Which one was it?
Been for all that malarkey last year when Theresa May sacked Brodie Clark and all that, and everyone found out they were just slipping people through, they'd just be waving them through. Because the thing is, last year all these people just got waved through and it was fine. And afterwards people said, well, nobody knows how many terrorists entered the country during that period. You think, well, presumably the ones who did are fantastically lazy because they've done nothing. Which just goes to show you could probably pretty much just leave it all open and let people mooch in and around, it'd all be fine.
I know a way that you can make people not mind the queuing process if you do it like the judging bit on MasterChef. The bloke at passport control goes, Mr. Jackson, you've been on holiday in Tenerife. You went with your wife, Joyce. You can come into the UK.
That's what we need, more applause. Every time somebody gets in, you go, yes, a big round of applause.
Have a finishing tape and put foil over them as they come into the country.
Olympics, this could be a silver lining, because if we keep those foreign athletes long enough at immigration, the British are bound to win. The UK border agency will deploy extra staff at Heathrow Airport following claims that passengers have been waiting up to 2 hours in immigration. According to a leaked email, a Spanish passenger walked through the control because he refused to wait any longer. So impatient was he to sample the fine cuisine and excellent weather he had heard so much about. 2 points to Shappy. Phil, who's putting the finishing line within striking distance?
Ah, yes, yes, yes. They are putting missiles on the tops of blocks of flats in the East End of London. Now, it's not like many of these buildings aren't well enough armed already. I think giving these people a 5 kilometre range of strike is foolish. Also, locating missiles in the East End of London and thinking they won't end up at a boot sale in Basildon 4 weeks after they're installed. Well, the missiles were here the other week, Sarge. I don't know where they've gone. Get your surface-to-air missiles here! So they've put them in... There's a very, very dinky little kind of gentrified area called the Bow Quarter in Bow, in the East End of London, and they've put 10 missiles on top of a tower there.
It's not a gated apartment, is it?
It is indeed.
Is it? No, it's just a terrible worry. You think you're opening the garage and you find you've invaded Norfolk. I mean, it would be...
Well, imagine some poor sod going up on the roof to try and put his sky dish right, you know. Oh, dear, I appear to have started war with another block of flats.
I don't get the logic of this at all, because presumably you need surface-to-air missiles because the fear is someone will get an aeroplane and crash it into part of London. But if there's an aeroplane that's about to crash into part of London and you shoot it with a missile, it's not going to not crash into part of London.
No, it said they're going to be deployed to shoot down airborne threats to the Olympic Games.
Well, they've got this new thing they call pop-up attacks.
What is that?
I don't know what a pop-up attack is, but presumably it is attacks by toddlers. Using books.
But who gets to classify what is an airborne threat? I mean, an airborne threat sounds like an opening ceremony with Coldplay in a balloon. I mean, it just sounds...
It could just be flu as an airborne threat, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, that's
you can't just use SAM rockets on anyone who's got the sniffles just to protect the rest of the population.
I was actually told to come in for a flu shot in a couple of weeks, and now I'm nervous.
I think it's all to increase our chances, isn't it? Because there's always the risk that they will get through passport control, the other teams. But if we shoot down competitors from other countries before they even land, I think, you know, we stand a chance in even the races. You know, I think Kenyan Airlines should be particularly worried.
And here comes the Kenyan now, a surefire winner. Oh, my Lord! He's been brought down by missiles. Who saw this?
The MOD has decided to put surface-to-air missiles on the roof of an exclusive apartment complex in East London in order to prevent an airborne attack on the Olympic Games. An army spokesman said it will be the last opportunity to stop anything getting to the Olympic Park. Although, to be fair, London Transport are doing its bit. 2 points to Phil. And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Hugo have got 4 points, but so too have Shappy and Phil. We start round two with a cutting from the Times Educational Supplement.
Ofsted inspectors reported one PE teacher's lesson as unsatisfactory, as there were children doing nothing for much of the lesson. The decision was overturned after it was pointed out the pupils were fielding a cricket match.
Thanks to John Blaine for sending us that. Jeremy, why might you end up on a plane for asking a policeman for directions?
Oh, this is the privatisation of the police force. And you see, I'm conflicted about it. I think the police should remain part of the public sector. And I am sort of conflicted about the police, because on the one hand, you can be very critical about their behaviour sometimes on demonstrations. On the other hand, they have on occasion defended me from neo-Nazi death threats. And you're kind of warm to people after something like that. But what's happening is a company with initials, which I don't know what they are, KBR,
yes.
who left Halliburton because Halliburton wasn't doing enough to plunder the world of oil, and they've decided to move into police stations.
Isn't just any company, this KBR. This is the American contractor...
Who built Guantanamo Bay,
built Guantanamo Bay, and I think carriages for Southwest Trains. It's... They're actually called Kellogg, Brown and Root. Sounds like a fantastically fibrous cereal, doesn't it? I bet they'd keep you regular or scare the crap out of you, I don't know.
I always get Halliburton confused with Haribo, anyway. It makes me very confusing headlines.
I get Guantanamo confused with guacamole.
It's just typical of these people. You know, it's not necessarily a bad idea to privatise back office functions in the police service, but some people think it is because, you know, it'll end up in the hands of evil corporations. And instead of arguing that that's not necessarily the case and giving it to, say, John Lewis, they go, no, we'll get in some complete bastards.
What is going to happen next? I'm going to have somebody knocking at the door telling me that the KGB are taking over my gas supply or...
Or my newspaper.
Yeah, or Mossad delivering the milk. I mean, it...
I mean, most of us actually, hand on heart, believe in some degree of public and private enterprise going on. Some things should be in the private sector, like pop music. Things that should be in the public sector, obviously, are things like the police and defence and roads and rail infrastructure, the health service, banking, land ownership, property and retail.
So that's just pop music in the private sector?
Because otherwise, pop music would all be bland and it would all be the same.
I like what you said, Jeremy, and I think you can come back next week.
KBR, an American military contractor that helped to build the Guantanamo Bay detention camp, is bidding for a role in running British police forces. Under the new privatisation of the police, if you commit a crime and you're not entirely satisfied with your prosecution within 28 days, you can recommit it free of charge. 2 points to Jeremy. Hugo, listen to this. Do you know, I didn't understand a single word of that.
Because it was in a northern accent, Sandra.
Oh, was it?
Yes, I've called the police, don't worry.
It was Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba.
They're the people who poured a bucket of water over John Prescott.
They did.
Did they?
Yeah, they did.
Why? I mean, good.
Why not?
Why? No. They're marvellous.
Who needs a reason?
Hugo, where are drastic measures being introduced?
Oh, that's clever. This is in Parliament.
Thank you. Slightly patronising. Just take a point off.
In Parliament, in the many, many bars in the Houses of Parliament, the people who work in them have been told to stop serving MPs so many drinks because they keep getting too drunk. There was this MP the other month who got so drunk that he started a fight. And then when the police came and apprehended him, he said, "You have to let me go, I'm a member of Parliament." And they said, "Oh, sorry," and let him go, at which point he ran up and headbutted the guy again. He's from Glasgow, you know.
I think it'd be better if they drank more because, you know, alcohol does reveal something about you and it would just be more fun. If you had MPs, "Right, you Tories, don't say to the terrorists, no. Out of my way, you beastly gutter sniper, I shall thrash you within an inch of your life."
I think Harriet Harman should wear one of those bandanas they have in Mexican restaurants with shot glasses in it. And just two bottles of tequila. Come on! Come on!
There should be a channel, Drunken BBC Parliament Channel, where they are forced, all members of Parliament are forced to start drinking at 10:30 in the morning.
Yes. And then Jeremy, that's the House of Lords.
Wouldn't that showdown between Cameron and Dennis Skinner have been better if both men had been savagely drunk, don't you think?
Yeah.
Because Cameron was so rude, and, like, Dennis Skinner was... He's an old man, and he's been around a long time. And if Cameron had just said, "Oh, why don't you bugger off back to North, you beastly commoner?" And then Vincent said, "Listen, I'm nearly dead, and I don't give a flip what happens now."
He's got a great track record for insults, Skinner. There's this one, he said, what was it? He said, "Half the members opposite are liars." And the speaker said, "You have to withdraw that." And he said, "I'm very sorry. Half the members opposite are not liars." Absolute genius.
A Commons advisory committee has ordered new restrictions to be placed on the Commons bars to stop MPs getting drunk. The House of Commons Commission decided that members of Parliament drank too much when Theresa May turned up to PMQs wearing a traffic cone. 2 points to Hugo. Shappy, who's been making cash from MASH?
Well, this is about the corrupt potato people.
Is that an entire indigenous...
I thought it was... at first, I thought it was a story about Boris Johnson, but it's not. I'm not saying he's corrupt, but he is a potato. This is about a guy that worked for Sainsbury's being wooed by Greenvale, which is a company who provide most of Sainsbury's potatoes in order to get a lucrative contract, right? And so they've just spent about £5 million, like, cash to this guy. I don't know his name. I probably should know his name.
His name is John Malam.
And they've flown him out for, like, hundreds and thousands of pounds worth of holidays. And I got a little bit envious because the biggest freebie I've ever had was an extra egg at a B&B, and that's only because they thought I was Maureen Lipman.
Greenvale, the potato company, gave this man, John Malam, £4.9 million.
And you know where they got the money
potatoes
from? They got it from Sainsbury's.
Yeah. They charged more for the potatoes than Sainsbury's was paying this guy. He's a food buyer for Sainsbury's. He had a 12-day holiday at the Monaco Grand Prix that cost £350,000. I know, imagine wasting your time at Monaco.
You can see why he'd be tempted after years of speed dating, sitting in lonely halls saying to me, "Well, interestingly, you should ask me about my profession. I'm actually a potato buyer for..." None other than Sainsbury's Super... You don't go yet, the time isn't quite up.
He tricked bosses out of £1.5 million, saying it was for potato research. Now...
Yes, it's potato.
Do you think he could have sat there saying, "There's an awful lot about potatoes that we don't know. I'm hoping to become a leader in the field of potato research." And it would be a field. I mean, it would be...
You could actually use potatoes to counterfeit money, couldn't you? By printing your own money.
But a scam involving millions of pounds in illicit payments all revolving around potatoes. It's like the John Grisham novel he'd write if he lived in Norfolk, isn't it?
It's not going to be a great heist movie, is it?
Do you think the potatoes...
Ocean's potatoes.
Oh, Guy Ritchie's all over it, isn't he?
Spot a potato. With Vinnie Jones as the corrupt potato buyer for Sainsbury's. There's big money in starch, Morris. You want to invest. Cobs are the future, son. Get involved.
John Malam, a food buyer for Sainsbury's, admitted taking bribes worth £4.9 million from potato company Greenvale in return for keeping their spuds on the shelves. Malam was paid by the potato company in luxury holidays, brown envelopes stuffed with cash, and a solid gold Mr. Potato Head. Malam ran up a 200 grand bill at Claridge's, covering the cost of one packet of Pringles from the minibar. Sainsbury's only noticed there had been foul play when the prices for their oven fries fell dramatically. Well, when the chips are down... No. 2 points to Shappy. Phil, why do we need to evolve our ideas on natural selection?
Some people researching have discovered that the human race are still evolving. Many thought that we'd stopped after we'd stopped being hunter-gatherers and had become settled. Once you settle down, you stop evolving, don't you? You get a job and you just get on with things.
Evolution in this house. Put that thumb away.
We are still evolving, which just must be driving the evangelists up the wall because they don't believe in it in the first place. We're still evolving. I don't know exactly what it is we're evolving. I don't know, Bluetooth.
I'm holding out for a bottle opener on the end of my nose.
What about a third eye so that we can look at our smartphone whilst walking safely?
My dad's an atheist, right? And when I
two points.
My dad's an atheist, and when we learned about Adam and Eve at school, because in the 70s, every school was a Christian school, I said, Adam and Eve, and he said, no, the first humans, it wasn't an apple they ate, it was a banana. Because they were monkeys.
Oh, see.
Look, my dad's foreign, his jokes don't always translate. Jeez, you're also racist.
No.
For some reason, it's the Finns. They looked at the Finns,
yeah, the Finnish
and they've
people.
Got statistics on the people of Finland from years and years and years, because there's nothing else to do in Finland but write stuff down, eat fish, and I don't know.
Oh, I think all foreign places are very rum. They do the most extraordinary things. It's like the past.
Bits that I didn't understand about it. Apparently, in terms of evolution, something happened 10,000 years ago that allowed us to digest milk. Chocolate Nesquik, that's my guess. I'm guessing.
No, because I was in Tokyo recently, and because we, in the, you know, up here, temperate, wherever, Europe, we, in order to preserve our water, develop brewing. But in the East, they develop tea. So when I was in Tokyo, people just hammered. I mean, absolutely, at 10 past seven, just off their trolleys, rolling around, like screaming mad, like it's sort of last train to Basildon at night. I mean, unbelievable state they were in. And then we're I'm from around there, leave it.
I didn't know we had people from Basildon in the audience.
They were, you won't understand, Sandy, back off.
Yeah.
So they, genetically, people from the East can't process alcohol, and so they're less... They less of it to get them completely smashed, apparently, because of that.
Research by the Institute for Advanced Study in Berlin, formerly the East Germany Polytechnic, has concluded that humans are still evolving. The Institute studied 6,000 Finns. That's Finns as in the people, not in the fish anatomy. We're not evolving that quickly. According to the researchers, men are evolving to be more attractive, intelligent, and sensitive. And again, I'm going to stress this is a study of Finns. Has nothing to do with the United Kingdom. Charles Darwin first developed his theory of evolution in 1836 when he sailed to the Galapagos and had sex with a beagle. Don't you love Wikipedia? At the end of round two, the scores are Shappy and Phil have got 8 points, but Jeremy and Hugo have snuck into the lead with 9. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from Brent Council's services brochure.
We do not provide a service for the removal of dormant wasp nests. However, if you wish, you may be knocked down with a broomstick and placed in a green wheelie bin.
Thanks to Victoria Pritchard for sending us that. Jeremy, have a listen to this. Jeremy, who has an over-inflated opinion of their art?
Now, this is interesting, because last week I was berating my given name as being an unfortunate one, because so many knobheads, I said, have the name Jeremy. And I had forgotten my friend Jeremy Deller, who's a very famous and successful and talented artist and very nice man. And he has devised this inflatable Stonehenge, which sounds like enormous fun. Because it means that we can actually have access. I think it's for the Olympics. We can actually go and touch and bounce around with Stonehenge, which we used to be allowed to do in the old days. And now all you can do is mournfully drive down the A303, having turned off the M3 at Andover, wistfully looking over at one of the ancient wonders of the world, thinking there was a time as a small boy when I touched those stones and felt the very energy that doesn't actually exist. But when Jeremy wanted to find out how to get it made, he rang up a company who specialise in Neolithic inflatable replicas. And they said, funny you should ask, because we've just done one for an American bloke in Ireland. And Jeremy thought, oh no, this means it's not an original idea. And I was fascinated by this, because apparently it was a dolmen, which a dolmen's like a sort of prehistoric shed, basically. It's a sort of lean-to made out of stones. And I wanted to see it, so I Googled Bouncy Castle, Ireland, and it's actually a village in County Antrim, Bouncy Castle. That's not true. I made that up. This Californian artist had made this dolman, this inflatable dolman, and then they met, and Jeremy Deller thought, oh, no, he's going to think I'm a plagiarist, and they got on famously, and it all has a happy ending. And nobody is in the wrong, and there is nothing wrong about it. There is nothing to sneer at, which is pretty much all we do on this show.
But it seems typical, Jeremy, that you wait thousands of years for an inflatable megalithic monument, and then two come along at once.
The trouble is, they are fantastically dangerous, Bouncy Castle. Oh, yeah. Everyone says, oh, there's so much health and safety nonsense these days. It was so much better in the old days when children's slides were surrounded by broken glass and landmines. if you go to a fete where there is... it'll be about 4 minutes before a bloodied child is dragged off, another one having ricocheted straight into its face.
Because parents are like, ooh, a bouncy castle, and they're all excited. And it's like, if you went up to some parents of small children and said, hello, would you like to put your children into a mosh pit at a Megadeth concert? It's exactly the same thing, but with better music.
It's worse because they're full of candy floss. I mean, they're sugared off their tits. Oh, yeah. Bouncing around like mentalists.
In defence to Megadeth, their gigs.
I nearly crushed my son to death the other day. At a fair, and it had one of those human hamster wheels.
Is that how they powered it? They had something.
I didn't know it was one in each one. I thought you could just go in two people, and then it started rolling. And me and my son were just nearly dead. Just kept crashing into my 4-year-old.
Hilarious.
We're all parents. It does happen sometimes when you almost kill your child.
My favourite one is the and as a dad, I did this to all of my children, and if they're listening to the radio, I didn't really do this, it's just a joke for the news quiz loves. Sometimes I think, oh, does her nappy lead change in? Lift her up, I'm in a doorway. Boom! Oh! Yeah.
Newborns are so light that, and you're so tired when you're came for it, that you feel like they'll float if you let go. They don't.
Also, the top of their head is soft, and so, you know, it's just the right shape for putting a small bowl of nuts.
Turner Prize-winning artist Jeremy Deller has unveiled his latest creation called Sacrilege, a Bouncy Castle Stonehenge. Stonehenge is part of the British identity, but no one knows what it's for. Oh, it's like Prince Edward. Sacrilege will tour around the country before ending up at the Olympic Games, where the inflatable will be shot down by surface-to-air missiles. There was a fear that the creator of the inflatable Irish tomb would sue the creator of the inflatable Stonehenge, but fortunately, both parties soon realised they were grown men arguing about bouncy castles. And stopped. 2 points to Jeremy. Hugo, who swallowed the bait of a trip to the Yemen?
This is, the Yemen tourist office, who haven't been terribly busy lately since their country collapsed into sort of civil war and horror. They've had lots and lots of inquiries lately due to the film Salmon Fishing in the Yemen, and lots of people want to go to the Yemen salmon fishing, but you can't go salmon fishing in the Yemen because there aren't any salmon. Yeah. You can only go getting kidnapped by Al-Qaeda in the Yemen, which is less fun and doesn't even have Ewan McGregor in it.
What I liked is the man who works for Yemen Tourism is called Benjamin Carey. It just doesn't sound as though he might be a local. And he said, since the film, there's been a real surge of visitors to our website. You know what they say, two's company, three's a surge.
Well, yeah, it's you know the film Tyrannosaur? It's a horribly violent film. Doesn't it sound like it's a film about dinosaurs?
Yeah.
Right? So I took my 4-year-old. It's the worst mistake I've made since I took him to see The Human Centipede, thinking it was The Hungry Caterpillar.
I used to go out with a girl called Deborah, and she didn't want to go on holiday to Dallas, so I was very disappointed.
Holidaymakers are attempting to go salmon fishing in the Yemen following the success of the film Salmon Fishing in the Yemen, despite the fact that there is apparently no such thing as salmon fishing in the Yemen. And the Foreign Office also currently regards the country as unsafe. Yemen has been described by experts as a haven for Islamic extremists. knows where they went on holiday. Salmon Fishing in the Yemen is the first in a projected series of films with other titles including Fly Fishing in the Levant, Trout Tickling in the Orient, and Catching Crabs on a Night Out in Aldershot. 2 points to Hugo. Chappie, who thinks the school gym isn't fit for purpose?
Girls.
Yes.
Girls don't like PE. And I remember being a girl. And and there was a thing, once you got to like a certain age of around 13, you had your period every week to avoid doing games. Ooh. And you usually had like a male gym teacher that didn't dare question, yeah, like, what the hell's going on with your body?
I thought that was the time when you were good at sport, because all you have to do to be good at sport if you're a girl is to put on a sanitary towel and wear white shorts and you can just play anything.
It's quite an important subject, though, because, yeah, I was a fat kid at school, and it's tough being fat when you're a kid. Like, we used to play kiss chase, and the boys didn't chase me, so there's no need for me to run, so I'd stay fat. And then we'd have that hideous thing where they'd get the most fit kids to pick the teams, and I was always the last to be picked in games, and I'd be like, well, I'll be here for a while, time for a snack. And the whole pee thing was a hideous, hideous thing. And if you forgot your kit, you'd have to do it in your vest and pants. And we had a teacher, and he used to say, oh, I've forgotten my kit, and teach us in his vest and pants. And in the 70s, no one really questioned these sort of things. And they make you wear, like, the most hideous outfits.
Airtech shirts we used to wear with our name on the outside, so that you didn't wear another girl's games blouse, because then I don't know what that could lead to.
Pregnancy.
Pregnancy. I quite liked PE at school. I liked playing with, what were those big, heavy exercise balls called? Ping pong. Those.
I liked that we had apparatus at primary school.
Oh, yes.
We had apparatus. I've never heard that word in any other college. And there was just these bars that were pointlessly folded into the wall. There was, oh, what's that? That's the apparatus. It's like one of those things no one talked about. It's like the uncle you don't talk about. What is that? Don't mention it. It's the apparatus. Don't go near the apparatus. No good will come of you toying. You're meddling with apparatus more evil than you can possibly understand.
The only place you ever see apparatus of which Jeremy speaks is when you're at school or in prisoner of war camp films. So I was very disappointed when I looked underneath my vaulting horse at school and did not find a tunnel in progress. John Mills in there going, shh, Kevy, don't tell the Hun.
A new study suggests that girls are being put off physical exercise for life by the poor quality of their school PE lessons. Girls think that sport is too competitive, while similarly, boys think that maths is too much about numbers and French is too foreign. So 2 points to Chappie. Phil, who wishes they hadn't stopped to pick up a penguin?
Two young men were out drinking in Australia, as you do. Hot. Humid. You are propelled towards beverages at an alarming rate. There are very few alcohol-free ones in Australia because you need to drink to try and forget that you are in Australia. Two Welshmen in Australia got drunk. And what do you think they did? They got drunk, they did something they regretted. They broke into SeaWorld and stole a penguin.
I got a fantastic idea. Do we? Let's break into SeaWorld and Nick and Penguin. Dress it as Owen Glendower and reenact key moments of Welsh history. They awoke the next morning,
yeah,
with a penguin in the bath.
They regretted their decision, and so they released the penguin into the wild. The penguin was discovered being chased out of the sea by a shark, and then being chased back into the sea by a dog.
Do you think
it was a baby penguin.
Do you think he got back to the enclosure at SeaWorld and went, you have no idea the morning I've had? How do you suppose they got the penguin past the security at the hotel? I mean,
it's and my they woke butler. Up in the morning. They woke up in the morning. When you wake up with a hangover and you hear, coming from the bathroom, you're like, oh no.
And then you pull back the curtain and it's a penguin. So, yeah, bless them, these lads. Yeah. They paid about $1,000 each in fines.
I quite liked it. The presiding magistrate told the men, perhaps next time you're at a party, you will consider drinking a little less, drawing howls of laughter from the Australians in the galleries.
I've swum with penguins.
Have you done?
In Cape Town, yeah.
Did they mind?
Well, they're kind of sort of quite upsettingly sexual creatures, penguins. It was spring, and they were all getting out of the water and making sort of reeking penguin love on the beach.
Oh, to one another. I was like, oh, I've got
yeah. I thought it was attracted to you. It'd be an annoying little thing on your leg. Rhys Owen Jones and Kerry Mules of Barry, Wales, have been fined $1,000 each after admitting they broke into SeaWorld theme park in Australia's Gold Coast while drunk and stole a penguin called Dirk. Small, furry, and at home in the wet, the Welsh are an ancient people. Oh, it's fun. OK, before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings. The teams have brought along Mr. Hardy.
Right, this is a bit of paper, and it's been sent in by someone called Tim O'Pray, and it's from the Irish Times. During a debate on the funeral industry, Deputy Anne Phelan from Carlow Kilkenny declared, I am from a rural constituency where anyone who wants to be cremated has to drive to Dublin.
Mr. Rifkin.
This is from Toby Wilson from Worthing, and it's a letter that's been sent into a newspaper, and it's quite short. It just reads, to the man who got on the bus dressed up as a wizard, who had removed the chip from his Oyster card and put it on a magic wand, I salute you.
Ms. Corsandi.
This is a note sent around classrooms in a Leighton Buzzard school. If any student has had beef casserole for lunch today, please come to reception immediately. There's nothing to worry about, thanks.
Mr. Jupitus.
This has been sent in by Mike Henley, who spotted this one in the Highworth Link magazine. Due to circumstances totally beyond their control, Highworth Historical Society have had to cancel the evening with Sir Isaac Newton on May the 4th.
Let's take a look at the final score. Shappy and Phil have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Hugo with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Dunmore Times sent in by Tobias Tilling.
Waterford boy, aged 8, saves sister's life. I wouldn't do it again, he told reporters. She's been a real pain this week.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Jeremy Hardy, Hugo Rifkin, Shappy Corsandi and Phil Jupitus. In the chair was Sandy Togsvig, and the news was read by me, Zeb Soames. The chair's script was written by Rodri Crooks, James Kettle and Simon Littlefield. With additional material by Jack Bernhardt and Katie Wilkins. The producer was Lindsay Fenner. News.